wonderful location and wonderful workshop, although I ended up missing a good part of it due to teaching responsibilities. It's hard to find someone to teach for you. Duncan knows that. Okay, so I'll talk about topological surface states, mostly focusing on recent results. By recent, I mean post-RMP. So this talk will go in two directions. One is looking at some of the results we have had before and looking at that those results from new point of view, and also looking at the new results from based on what we knew before. So it's kind of going back and forth between recent results and previous development we had. Okay, so I will start out with a brief commentary on the summary on hexaborite. There's a lot of claim that this is a topological insulator. The claim is mostly based on transport. And there's a number of papers by now, not just two, a number of them. So there is a claim that there is two-dimensional surface transport, and so far I looked at all these papers and I cannot find any reason for this compound to be more interesting than many other compounds we know in quantum physics with some sort of two-dimensional surface transport. So the question remains open: are we seeing topological surface states? And there is interesting commentary on the journal club. So the issue is unclear. So in this case, we ran into the reverse problem, that now that the transport is happening, and people don't unanimously believe that it's a topological surface state, right? So this is the opposite of bismuth selenide. So that's where I'm going back and connecting. So seeing surface transport, 2D transport, Hall and all sorts of things doesn't really mean that you're seeing surface transport. So now I'll go back and look at some of the early results we had. It's actually tracing back what is happening now. So this is our first paper on topological surface states. We argued that you can, even in the very first set of results, we argued that you can find divergent resistivity by placing Fermi level in the gap. So what did we see back then? We saw that there is a central Fermi surface on the surface, and the bulk bands are, although they're bent, they're below the Fermi level, they don't cross, so the bulk band has a gap, bulk band structure has a gap. And then in addition, there is these pockets. Now the question is this a topological surface? So in this case, I mean, I'm going back in time, and we showed all these things are there, but this did not convince anyone. And in the very first paper, we said that just by doing surface transport, you cannot prove topological nature of surface states. And that was the motivation for us to do spectroscopy. It's not that we cannot do transport. So this is the point. So then when you look at when you do the spin resolve measurements of the surface state, then it becomes clear that although these pockets are also two-dimensional surface state, but they have nothing to do with topology, but they contribute to transport. And believe me, since you haven't seen much work on mercury telluride, this is also happening in mercury telluride. This situation is even worse. So how do you know that you are actually seeing topological surface state? So this was our very first motivation to write the very first paper on this topic. So then when you assign the spins, then you can see that these surface states, they're two-dimensional, they contribute to 2D transport, but they're actually trivial. There is no, as you go around, you don't pick up a phase there. So let me ask this question then. Transport alone does not tell us much, really. And this is journal club comment is telling you. It's from the theorist. So many materials exhibit surface states and 2D transport, and how do you know that these are topological surface states? So these are three scenarios. In many narrow gap semiconductors, bulk band bending near the surface gives rise to 2D transport, because the bent bulk band can cross from the other. You'll see 2D transport, right? Although the bulk is insulating, surface is metallic. So that even in, as I showed in the very first example of topological insulator, that even in many topological insulators, topological surface state coexists with trivial surface state, and those trivial surface state contribute to the transport. So if you look at transport, you cannot get the full picture out of it. And then surface hull, even if you isolate the topological part of it in some other way, by metal engineering or something, and then you look at the surface hull effect, even in that perfect TI, you'll see a full integer quantum hull effect, because you cannot measure the half, right? It has to be measured spectroscopically. And these are the motivations that led us to consider to do spectroscopy, and that's my perspective going back, why we started out doing that. Okay, so this is the overview of my talk. So I'll start out a brief overview of this Z2 topological insulator and the fundamental properties, topological phase transition, but most of it will focus on interaction with effects. What happens if you introduce some sort of interaction, say magnetism or superconductivity on the surface, how does it modify? How do you get the topological surface states? How does it respond to these interactions? And I'll suggest some possibility to other things like realizing prime fermions, and also how to go beyond this Z2 invariant topological insulators, the Kane-Milley theory, like examples like TCI phase, one example, and where you have the discrete symmetry, then you can have new topological invariants. And what is very, very surprising from experimental point of view is that one would think that these states are not robust to disorder. And I'll show examples that you can get a 50-50 alloy, the states and spin polar, everything is robust, even though you don't have perfect crystalline space group symmetry in a 50-50 alloy. I mean, that's the best entropy you can bring out, right? So experimentally, this experimental result, I haven't seen any theoretical idea that can elaborate on it. So the talk will go.
Had a question here. What
yes.
TCI.
TCI is topological crystalline insulator, where you have a space group symmetry. Some spatial symmetry is protecting. It's giving rise to some new topological invariant, and then how to measure those phases. Okay, so. Let me start out acknowledging my students and collaborators. So these are the students in my group who are carrying out much of the recent work. And of course, previous members, they contributed to the development. And we're using various national facilities. And the samples are mostly these days MB-grown, mostly from Penn State, Nitin Shamarth group. We're also using sample from a number of other groups, and this work is supported mostly by DOE. Although we are collaborating with a number of other groups, we ourselves have started to grow crystals because it looks like controlling this crystal quality is quite important. And we can try to do it, if we try to do it ourselves, we know what is the spectroscopic requirement for doing that. So not only that, we are also trying to put together this growth, integrate these growth facilities with the spectroscopic setup. The ultimate goal is to combine various spectroscopic techniques under UHP with a growth setup with MBE growth. And this is under development in my lab. Okay, so this is mostly a theory community, so I don't have to go into explaining the topological invariant, Z2 and Chang number, other things. But what I found very exciting is that in quantum Hall case, you cannot, you don't have a real three-dimensional generalization, right? So you can think of stacking those things, but then you'll get surface state, they are not protected, and top and bottom, you don't have anything, right? So what is interesting to me, a 3D topological insulator is like an empty metallic box. So on all surfaces, you have a guaranteed metal, you have half Dirac gas, spin momentum locked, in the bulk you have insulating state. So this 3D, and not only that, with this 3D state, there is a lot of interesting interplay you can have in terms of broken symmetry, like you can turn it into an antiferromagnet or superconductor and other things. You can realize a lot of other phases, which is not possible with these 2D states. So that is quite interesting. And as I said, that transport, even according to theorists, the transport cannot give you these 15 distinct topological insulating state in a clear, distinctive way. So the idea is to probe this bulk boundary correspondence and this topological track, this topological phase transition, and track the spin and momentum of these states. One of the invariants, the first one, you could actually get through magnetoelectric effect, but then this invariant is just, once you know that this invariant is non-trivial one, only then you want to go out and try to do that. And then with the weak invariant, there are a number of other proposals actually. In the beginning, weak invariants are thought to be trivial, but there are non-trivial things in the defects and dislocations. There's interesting physics associated with that. So we are using, let me go back. We're using photoelectric effect in all possible, in different types of variants, variant geometries, scattering geometries, like detecting spin, polarization, or we can also do time, all sorts. So by looking at all these tunability, you have a complete picture of age and bulk of these any of these materials. And so we're looking at the insulator, superconductor, magnet, and all sorts of things, and trying to connect the boundary and the bulk. So I showed this plot before, that this allowed us to, without assigning the spin, you don't know what is topological state there. So that led to this material engineering idea, that if you start with this this type of states, then you can find a way to tune the material to localize these states. They are trivial two-dimensional surface states. They contribute to transport, but they're not. They do not contribute to the Berry phase. So you could realize a simple system to look at, and that's exactly what we have done by varying the surface potential by Bismuth-antimony ratio or substituting other materials. You can localize the trivial surface states, and then you're left with the interesting part of it. So then the transport should be only from the interesting part. Okay, so the so our claim is that if you take one of these materials and dope it to and move the Fermi level from the valence band to the conduction band and conduction band to the valence band down, then and look at the spins at every possible location of the Fermi level, you always get a singly degenerate state. And then at some point they cross, then the spin polarization is, there's no polarization, and you have degenerate, and then you have it inverting, so that means it's really connecting these two sides. So this confirms that the states are, no matter where you place your chemical potential, it's always gapless, and it's always single, the band is single polarized. there's a single state there. You can, of course, put Fermi level in the gap. There is no, you don't start out there, but you can place it there by chemical modification of the sample. And so this is further detail with the actual data that if you have a K plus state, the net polarization is mostly negative in this, the way we defined it. What matters is that it's opposite in the K minus direction. And then if we look at the Z component of the polarization, which is noisy, I mean, there's no clear structure there. And the actual scans look like this. So the up channel and down channel are clearly separated despite the apparent noise you see here. And of course, this gives rise to the picture that you have half electron gas here. Instead of four modes, you have half of them, so you have a half Dirac gas. But what is interesting is that, unlike in the quantum spin Hall effect, you don't have any, so there is no such spin Hall-like effect on the edge. So the edge of a 3D topological insulator is interesting because it's not like a quantum spin Hall system. So on this surface, you could have actually multiple Dirac Fermi, and actually many of these materials do not have single Dirac. It's an accident of Arthur's experiment that the surface we looked at, it had this single Dirac fermion, but you could also have three states. There's no reason you cannot have three states on the side surfaces. So now the question is, how do they connect? On this surface, it could be different. So how do they connect on the edge? So this actually, it's connected to the four invariant structure. That's why you cannot reduce it to the quantum spin Hall scenario. Okay, so then we look at, so far I was looking at only near the crossing, near the Dirac node. As we move away from the Dirac node, then the surface states have to conform. They have to take the shape of the conduction band or the valence band. So they have to conform to the crystal potential. They will warp. They will deform. And then we can look at spin. We can take any k-space cut to look at the spin texture and then map out the full picture. And if we do that, then this is summarizing a lot of data here. So that near the node, you have a very small z component. And as you move away from the node, as the surface state is getting warped, develop a Z component there, same in the opposite direction. So this, in some way, it's interesting that it has to develop a 3D texture because on the surface, the net Berry phase has to be pi, and that is the tied to the topological invariant, the strong invariant, and it's set by the bulk. So since we're nothing is changing in the bulk, so that phase cannot change. So the only way the system can adapt to it is adjust to this warping is develop that 3D texture. So one can manipulate these surface states further. Most of the ARPES people will show you the electron doping of bismuth selenide, which looks like this. But I don't know why they try to electron dope it, because this material, the apparent problem is that it comes electron doped. So if you electron dope it further, you are raising chemical potential up there. What you should actually try to do is hold up the surface. And the way to do it is, well, one can do that through gating, but under UHV, you can put surface dopant like NO2, like people do in graphene. So then you can lower the chemical potential, keep the Fermi level in the gap. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just that you don't see many people talking about that because they're going to do transport under UHV. But there's nothing wrong with the material. It's with the ability of transport measurements to add up to the environment. We don't have any problem with that. We can keep the Fermi level inside under UHV at the wherever we like, including at the Dirac point, and then we can measure what are the spectral properties there. So Not only that, one of the things that disturb transport measurement is disturbing us because we have momentum space selectivity. If there is some bulk state, imperial state, I know that, but they're in different momentum. They're not overlapping in the surface. So to measure the topological order, I'm not affected. My measurement is totally unaffected by that, right? So this is what I'm saying, that there's nothing wrong. You can place Fermi level there. There's nothing wrong. It's just that under UHP, you cannot do other experiments. So then it becomes very clear that if you have a structure like this near the Dirac node, you with a half Dirac gas, as long as time reversal symmetry is there, you have absence of backscattering. We have shown that early on. Okay, so far this is like, all of this is in our review. So far, what has emerged? I haven't gone into the proximity effect. That's what I'm going to next. So what we are seeing is that this is a under UHP condition. You have a topological insulator. You can look at the topological order, even at room temperature, and there's nothing wrong. And this is 10K. You can raise temperature to 300K. There is very little scattering on the surface. This particular compound has a small electron phonon scattering, so even the phonon scattering is weak, so which is very interesting. It's not topologically guaranteed. It's a material property that allows us to do that. So then this is exciting. So it's like seeing quantum Hall-like effect, a topological effect at room temperature. So the next thing to do is to, okay, so let's track what is the degree of polarization, what is the max you can get out of these states. So we have done a detailed work on MBE films, and this is the sample layout. So of course, when you are you have a very thin film, then you are in the, you're not in the 3D limit. So the top and bottom surfaces talk to each other, and then you get the topological state. But by the time you are 4-5 QL, then you get the connectivity, you get the Dirac fermion out there. So we track what is happening to the polarization as a function of thickness, and indeed the polarization develops, it grows. But what is interesting is that even if you go to the bulk limit under similar experimental conditions, that it never actually goes beyond like 50%. So, and we haven't seen that happen in any other compound, any other topological insulator. It's always like, if you do a controlled experiment, then it's always like 50% or so. So this is interesting, that why we never get the maximum possible polarization. So there must be some. I'm not saying this is topologically limited, but I'm saying that there is some material aspect to it. Okay, so now I'm getting into the next generation type of thing, that so we can take these systems and do all sorts of things. So this is like a two interesting 2D electron gas, and so we can turn it into a superconductor and do other things. We can turn it into a magnet, including, in fact, interferomagnets. You can have a nail transition in these compounds with certain doping. So what I find interesting is that this 3D topological insulators, on the topological insulator surfaces, you can do almost all of condensed matter physics, like quantum Hall, magnetism, superconductivity, everything. So it has become a new laboratory for doing condensed matter physics. So whoever was doing what, now they are trying to do that on a topological surface. So now I first address the topological phase transition. So if these systems are topologically non-trivial, we should be able to, if we reduce spin orbit coupling, can we recover the trivial state? So that is a sort of a sanity check, that there's nothing unusual, it's not some sort of accident that giving rise to this unusual effects in experiments. So we start out with selenide, which has large spin orbit coupling, but if we reduce spin orbit coupling by replacing with selenium, then we are going toward the sulfide end, which has small spin orbit coupling. There is some structural change, but what we see is that we started out with materials with Fermi level in the conduction band. So on the sulfide end, I see a clear gap, right? Fermi level in the conduction band, but there's no surface state connecting it. And then as we increase selenium content, we see that the conduction band is coming down and the valence band is approaching to meet the conduction band. And then at some point when the band inversion happens, this surface states get connected. So the surface states are formed there. And then if we look at the spin channel here, so this is conduction band channel. Here there is no state. There's nothing to look at through spin. So we see doubly degenerate band. And then on the other side, we see single degenerate. So this is, so then it's tied to this bulk band inversion. So this convinced me that this is a topological phase transition. I mean, in other words, there is a bulk boundary correspondence that when something is happening in the bulk, this is affecting the surface, and it's tied to it. So one thing we did not immediately realize in this while we were doing that is that if you go near at the transition, so now this is a 3D material, right? So at the transition, that the surface state and the bulk, they're all degenerate. So you have a 3D semi-metal, Dirac semi-metal, right? So this would be the first example of a 3D version of graphene in a real sense, right? And now we have at the inversion point, I have a Dirac semi-metal. So the previous attempts to identify 3D Dirac semi-metal did not work because there was always some other band that would come on the way. So you could not, you have the Dirac semi-metal, I mean, you have a band crossing, but then you have some other band. So that creates another Fermi surface. So they coexist. So in this system, remarkably, you don't have the other band. So you have the Dirac semi-metal. The other way to think of it is that it's like a double Weyl fermion system. So one tunability we are now thinking is if we can break the center of symmetry, then I should be able to separate the Fermi arcs. So I should be able to go from the degenerate, at that composition, go from the degenerate double Weyl fermion state to a non-degenerate state. So it should be possible to identify the engineer a way to realize the Weyl arc in the system. And of course, they're connected through the bulk. Okay, so another aspect of these materials would be is that there is always this momentum space chirality, and this is this is the first time Charlie Kane and I worked together from theory experiment point of view, that what Charlie suggested that this has to do with this mirror plane, momentum space mirror plane. So this is a discrete symmetry. So there would be a topological invariant tied to it, which I think he called it mirror Chern number. So in this systems, this is -1, and you have always this left-handed chirality. And it's interesting that of all the materials we have looked at so far, they all have this negative mirror Chern number. Finding one with positive would be interesting because then you can put them together at the interface. You can get a trapped soliton-like interesting state. So this is the reason I bring this up is that this is important for this TCI phase, topological crystalline insulator, right? Because it's tied to this discrete crystal symmetry. So then this invariant in topological crystalline insulator, under certain space group, you could realize -2, and that's what we found. I'll get to that near the end of my talk. I'll show that in certain compounds, this mirror channel number is minus 2. So this cannot be a topological, zero topological insulator. So that's a very clear signature of protected state beyond the Kane-Mealy scenario. Okay, so...
What material would have the mirror number 1?
We don't know of any. I mean, these are all based on first principle calculations, and then they're kind of blind, so I cannot track what is leading to that invariant to be negative.
Isn't thin till right having a minus 1?
It's minus 2. Minus 1 would make it a Z2 TI, right? It has minus 2. We showed that in the recent paper. I'll get to that later in my talk. It's not minus, it's minus 2 because it has 2 Dirac cones, or even number. Okay, so now I'm going to this proximity type of effect. The first I'll go to magnetism. So now what happens if we introduce surface magnetism or bulk magnetism in the systems? So in order to make this contrast, that if we try to put some magnetic dopant, it also leads to some changes in the crystal structure to some extent, and also there are some trivial effects on the surface. So we decided to make a contrast, put a non-magnetic impurity of similar composition, similar concentration, and contrast the scenario, what happens. So do a contrast experiment. So if we put manganese, which is magnetic, it has a magnetic moment, and zinc, which is non-magnetic, you can see that as we put zinc up to 10%, there is no signature of a gap state. I mean, the gap is always there. Maybe there's some intensity lowered here. There's more scattering due to disorder in the system, but it's always there. Whereas as I increase magnetic impurity, the Dirac point intensity is decreasing, and eventually it opens a spectral weight suppression. It's not entirely clearly gapped, but it's certainly significantly down. The spectral weight suppression is about 10, factor of 10 than in the zinc case. So it's not entirely clear. So then just by looking at ARPES, what is the effect of magnetic impurity? So we have to do the spin texture and couple it with other experiments like resonant X-ray scattering or some sort of surface dichroic measurement. And that's what we did. So when we have manganese on the surface, even if manganese is not uniformly distributed, even if there is some clustering or some distribution, some island type of thing, we always see that at low temperature, we can see this hysteretic behavior. And then there is some component of moment out of plane, component of moment. And then as we raise temperature, eventually this hysteresis disappears, the moment disappears. And what is interesting is that this is now we couple that to the ARPES measurement, and we can see this type of behavior only when there is a significant suppression of intensities. So when we have a significant suppression of intensity, what we see is that if we look at the spin texture across this gap-like behavior, we see that there is a very clear Z component developing. There is a Z component as you are far away from the Dirac node or gap, which is tied to the warping, which I showed in the beginning. Now there is a Z component at the gap. And then as we move away from the gap, the Z component disappears. It recovers. So this is the raw data. There is a this is the Z component. There's a finite Z component developing as a function of momentum. So then the picture looked like this. So I'm drawing based on these magnitudes, I'm drawing the spin vectors here. So it looks like near the gap, there is a Z component both on the upper part of the Dirac band and the lower part of the Dirac band. But as you move away from it, then it recovers. You have the topological insulator spin texture. So this can also be done by placing Fermi level in the gap. Again, under UHV, you want to do hole doping, not electron doping, so that you can keep it stable, Fermi level in there, right? So you, so when you do that, then that, then you can see that more clearly, there is out of plane component. So now if I take a cut, this is the surface Fermi surface. Now if I take a cut here, that means I have a net polarization on the lower Dirac band, and then I have a spin polarized surface, Fermi surface. If I place chemical potential here, so I have a net polarization, but if I place chemical potential down there, I have no net polarization, but I have, if my chemical potential is down here, I cannot tell whether it is whether the sample is magnetic or it's Z2TR, because the spin texture is the same. So then one way to think about it is that, as that if we think of Berry phase, there is a Berry phase when you place chemical potential down there, but it disappears as you approach the gap. And then you get a fullerized. So this is what we have so far. This is this appeared in Nature Physics. So what is why is this interesting? This is of course a magnetic proximity effect on the topological surface. So this is one way to think about it is that now if you can make a nanostructure where you have the moment up on this side and moment down, then you can create a dissipationless channel. So this is interesting. So you start with the 3D TI, and then nanostructure, the magnetism in the way we showed there. So there's another interesting reason for doing this is that, as I said, now I mentioned that near the inversion critical point, if your crystal structure is not centrosymmetric, you can get Weyl fermion. But there is another route to Weyl fermion. Even if you start with a centrosymmetric crystal, which is bismuth selenide and manganese doped bismuth selenide, then you magnetize it at the critical point, then now you can split the bands, right? So then this would be another way to realize Weyl fermion. So this will require some material engineering. So now we'll go to superconductivity. So the first report of superconductivity came from Kalva's group. He put copper on bismuth selenide and then found a transition around von Kelvin. And so we showed that at that time, based on the calculation, it was not clear because the samples are doped enough that maybe the chemical potential is way up in the conduction band where there is no surface states are degenerate with the bulk, so there is no hope with this material. So we decided to look at the superconductor. We could see that the surface states are actually isolated. They're not degenerate with the bulk. So that means they retain their identity in the superconductor. So subsequently, there are at least two or three groups have reported some sort of zero bias peak in this material. But I would say the question remains open because the order parameter symmetry of the system is not known. And also spectroscopically, it's difficult to track that zero bias peak. So this I would say this issue is open. It's not settled yet, but I think one has to first settle this order parameter symmetry of this crystal, which requires actually better quality crystals than we have so far. So we have extended our search to other candidate materials, including non-centrosymmetric materials. They have lower TC, and they are in some way from a spectroscopic point of view, they are a bit more challenging. So you need to build new spectrometers to do that. So, however, recently we have a way out. We figured that actually there is a simple way to make even the original Fuqing proposal work. We took another route, and then we ran into some material challenge. And now I think we figured out a way to make the Fuqing proposal work in the following way. So this is the set of questions I have for all types of the zero bias experiment, this Maharana type of claim. So the question I have is that how do you know what is happening at the interface? I mean, whoever is working on whatever interface. So there are many possibilities. Maybe the bent bulk band, which is also superconducting, it's also what the interface superconductivity you are claiming, it's coming from that two-dimensionality, it's coming from that bent bulk band. How do you know that the topological surface states are actually superconducting, right? There's no guarantee that. You'll see some sort of proximity effect, but that's not what we are interested in. So interface superconductivity seen in transport or various other black box type experiment where you apply some probe and find some response, you don't actually know if the Dirac surface states are forming Cooper pair. So first you have to find an interface where Dirac surface states are actually forming Cooper pair. So this is what we set out to address. So what is happening at the interface microscopically? In other words, can I observe the proximity effect in momentum and spin and all this space? In other words, I want to see how much you have, say, you formed this interface between metal and TI and superconductor or whatever interface. I want to see the proximity effect in a moment. I want to resolve it in momentum space, in spin space. I want to get a microscopic measure of that. So in the beginning, I thought it would not be possible, but now I figured that there is a way to make it work. So this is what we are trying. We are trying a number of superconductors with bismuth selenide. And what we are doing is that now we are looking at the interface state. So there are two ways to do that. One is to grow a thin layer of superconductor on top of bismuth selenide, or take a superconductor and grow a thin layer of bismuth selenide on top of it, right? So there are two ways to do. And then for the spectroscopic method to work, we have to figure out that we have the right thickness so that there should be the TI is in the bulk limit, even though it's thin, and there is substantial proximity effect that I can actually observe spectroscopically, and I can resolve the proximity effect spectroscopically. And this is what we found, that by playing with that thickness and the match, the right pair. So what we can see is that at the interface, now I can tune my photon and the spectrometer to look at the interface state. And what we see is that as we scan at high temperature, we see, of course, the bulk band has some Cooper pairing in there. There is some coherent peak. But there is also, if we now, so the condition here is that the Fermi surface of the superconductor cannot overlap in momentum space with the Fermi surface of the TI. So once that condition is met, we are fine. Because then I can tune my momentum probe selectively to the superconductor bulk band and to the TI surface band. So this is what we are doing. So when we track the Dirac band at the interface, then we see that at high temperature, there is no gap. There is a Fermi step, there's an edge there, but as we cool through the transition temperature down to the lowest temperature, we see a gap open, spectral weight is pulled back, and a coherent peak is appearing. And then again, when we raise temperature, we see that it disappears. So that means we have a microscopic way to track whether the Dirac surface states are forming Cooper pair or not.
See?
Yeah.
You're doing photoemission through the superconducting layer?
Both. In different geometries. In one case, through the superconducting layer. In another case, through the TI layer.
Okay. But how thick is the superconducting layer?
Yeah, it depends. There is various materials and...
No, but this is important, right? So you need to... tell us the number.
So let me give you this the number for this particular pair. So if you grow bismuth selenide about 6 quintuple layer, you know the quintuple layer, right? On niobium-based superconductors, so that thickness doesn't matter. So it just what matters is the how many quintuple layers you have, and then you track the photon energy where you can get at what point your Fermi surface from the superconductor disappears from the detector. That means you're not then at that point you're not seeing the interface anymore. Right, so let's flip it. Let's say this is the superconductor, and then you're getting the electrons out from here, and the thickness and the photon energy are selected in a way that you're not seeing the Fermi surface of the superconductor anymore. That means you're not seeing the interface. So the point you see the Fermi surface of the superconductor, which is in the buried layer, then you know that your electrons are coming through the interface. So that's our track. So then we can see that, next slide, it's better. So now this is broad because it's a buried signal, right? So I'm not looking, this is not the surface Dirac fermion, it's the interface Dirac fermion. So now at the interface Dirac fermion, I set my momentum location of the detector here. And then I track what is happening to the quasi-particles there. And then I can see that it will develop a coherent peak only below the superconducting transition at the interface. So this is, we are doing a lot of detail of this work. And then the next step is to look at the zero mode. You have to look if there is something appearing here, right? So, but then for that you need to apply.
How do you know that there is proximity effect is not induced on some, the conduction bands? Maybe you're doping the conduction bands of the topological insulator by putting on the superconductor.
So we have all the track. For example, this particular data set, it's not on the bulk conduction band. It's you can see that there's no bulk band here, right? So it's on the it's not near the Dirac node. We can tune that to go down to the DN node, but we're in the gap. So the superconductivity is happening in the gap. So we have this is the idea that how to spectroscopically resolve the proximity effect. There's no reason we cannot do that, right? The next thing to do is to apply a magnetic field and see if we see a zero mode, right? Yes?
What is the critical temperature of the...
So in this case, we are using... I believe it's 7 Kelvin. It depends on the thickness of these things. Huh?
Is the material a trade secret at this point? Or?
Yeah, I will have a preprint. We'll have a preprint. Yeah. So then, that's one way. So there's nothing wrong. I can always do spectroscopic study, spectroscopic proof of whatever zero mode or whatever is there. There's nothing wrong. So the way I view this thing is that it's like in cold atom physics, right? They're creating Mott insulator, superconductor, everything. But are we using that in our laptop, right? So, but still cool physics. So the way I track the physics, I may not be able to tell you that this you can make you can braid these quasi particles and do whatever. But as far as physics is concerned, so we're doing it like cold atom people do, right? But however, so developing this technology, these methods is allowing us to identify what is the ideal interface to develop the material so that we can optimize these effects, right? So that's the goal here, not just the physics. So with that motivation, as I said, we are building this a hybrid system where we can grow these materials at basically engineer it and optimize it, and there's feedback between STM, RPS, and other measurements into the growth chamber. So then we don't have to worry about surface contamination and other things. So by combining STM, RPS, so to look at these Majorana type of thing, so we have to look at this high field vector STM. So far, low temperature, high field vector STM. I haven't seen any paper. I mean, Seamus Davis is doing perpendicular field STM. So this would not only be exciting for topological physics, it's also for correlated electron physics. Okay, how much time I have? I have lots more interesting results. 10 minutes. Okay, so I'll try to rush. So in K-Mini Z2 theory, there is TR invariance that discrete symmetry gives rise to the topological quantum numbers. So the number of then the idea is can space group discrete symmetries give rise to topological invariance, and can we see these protected surface states in real dark materials? So that's the next question I'm trying to address. The material predicted by Liang Fu is the tin tellurite, but tin tellurite, you can never get it in type. There are reports by other group. I think they mistook. They're claiming to see surface state, but I can show that this can be explained by the bulk band being bent near the surface. So you don't have KZ dependence because it's a bent bulk band, right? But then how do you know that it is really topological surface state? So this is the algorithm we have developed. That first you invert the system, take it into the non-inverted side. But the idea I showed through the topological phase transition thing, that you reduce spin-orbit coupling, get it to the normal side, normal order, and then the surface state should disappear. So this is what we have done. When we have high lead concentration, we see the bulk band, and this is the KZ dependence. Of course, the bulk bands will change with KZ because it's a three-dimensional crystal structure, three-dimensional band, right? And then there's nothing at the Fermi level, so this is dark, all dark. There's nothing at the Fermi level. And then I invert the system. So this bulk boundary correspondence, I invert the system. And in the inverted regime, suddenly I see, of course, the bulk bands are there. I should see that, right? I can see the bulk bands, just as I saw the bulk bands here. But in addition, I'm also seeing some signal at the Fermi level. And this signal is, you can see that it's KZ independent. In this case, it's mixed with the tail of the bulk band, but there is signal at the Fermi level. So this is the surface state. This is not changing. As I change KZ, the bulk band is changing. It requires ultra-fine alignment. So we have to do ultra-fine alignment of the sample so that we are not mixing up between the dispersion of the bulk band or the surface state. So this was a bit of a challenging experiment. So then what we see is that still, how do you know these states we saw, they may be doubly degenerate. It goes back to the question Antonas, that how do you know this is mirror Chern number? What is the mirror Chern number? That you do not know without doing spin, right? So what we are doing here is that we tracked these states all over the Brian zone. Now I have a pair of them. And then in this compound, it's very nice that it just comes, naturally, the compound comes with Fermi level at the Dirac crossing. So we did not have to do much here. It just right at the Dirac crossing. But we had to then, at the Dirac crossing, the problem is that your spin is degenerate. So you don't know the topological character right away. So what we had to do, we had to scan at a higher binding energy. This could also be done by lowering the chemical potential. So then when we scan here, we can see that the in-plane component on this two detector, up and down detector, left, right and left detector, they line up pretty well, although there is a large background there. Part of it is detector background, part of it is sample background. But when we look at the out-of-plane component, there is some signal there. So when we do the subtraction, it's flat. So this is the So this is the out-of-plane component. So in the out-of-plane component, we don't see much. And this is cut one. This is the cut near the Fermi level. And this is cut two. It's out-of-plane again. It's crossing, it's touching the bulk band. So we want to check whether if we are seeing polarization of the bulk band, then that means there's something wrong with the experiment because there's no bulk bands are degenerate. This is centrosymmetric spin orbit system, right? So then that this is a sanity check that it's fine. And then what we do here in cut two, which is again crossing the bulk band, in plane there's nothing there. So that means there is not the bulk bands have really no polarization within the sensitivity of the detector. But then if you look at the in-plane part near the Fermi level, then there is some signal, up-down signal. And this is tracking all of them. So then this is the scenario that is appearing, that in this case, all these Dirac cones have same momentum space chirality. They go the same way. So then your mirror channel number is minus two. You have four of them. And in this case, you have one of them, and it's enclosing the gamma point, right? So that it's enclosing the time reversal invariant point, and in this case, it's not enclosing the time reversal invariant point. It's just symmetric around the mirror lines. So these results taken together convinced us that this is interesting, this is non-trivial. And finally, you can see that this is observed even in the alloy, right? So in the alloy, this symmetry should not, that mirror symmetry should not be there, even at least at the microscopic level. But it looks like the average symmetry is good enough to have this effect survive there. So this is the clear contrast between the TR invariant topological insulator, I mean the Z2 topological insulator and the space group TCI. Okay, so this in some way is a summary of what I talked about. I did not show a lot of materials details. So I tried to focus on topology is about the irrelevance of the details, right? So that's why I did not go into the material details. Also, we have done a lot of details. So what I tried to focus on topological information mostly. So I showed this Dirac Z2TI spin texture. Then I showed this hedgehog magnet. So this is like a spectroscopic version of the magnetic proximity effect. Then I showed the superconducting proximity effect, that it's possible to get without magnetic field. It's possible to get the Dirac band form Cooper pair at the interface. And then I showed this TCI phase. In all these cases, I showed that there's a bulk boundary correspondence, that there's a topological phase transition involved in realizing these phases. Okay, so that's my conclusion, and many details can be found in my paper, which is not covered here. Oh, I also promised to show something about hexaboride, just show one slide, okay? So what happens in hexaboride is that it's unclear, so are there really surface state? So I had doubts that if hexaboride is really a topological insulator, then ARPES STM should really see these things. I mean, it cannot be, if you say surface state is so fragile or weak, then how can it be a robust topological insulator?
It would be the character of the conduction electron is very weak.
Well, I mean, we can see them. The thing is, even with the best set of data, it's difficult to argue for a clear surface state in ARPES or STM. So hexaboride is a puzzle, that there's beautiful transport, surface transport and all that, but surface sensitive measurements are not seeing anything clear, right? So, I think I don't mean to close the topic there, but it's open to further investigation.
Any questions?
Sorry, so the last slide about the Starion B6 is service day robot.
There's a very weak signal at the Fermi level there. So even at down to the low temperature, and we cannot see a big difference between high temperature. There's very little difference. So it looks like at far as ARPAS is concerned, surface state, even if they're there, they're not robust. So we have experience in studying a lot of topological insulators by now. And surface states, it's hard to get rid of them. You do this, you do that, they're just always there. Why in hexaborite, even if it is there, why should it be so difficult to see?
Could it be because of a different thermal velocity, like it's very slow? Why, I'm just guessing.
Yeah, no, we were looking down to like 2 Kelvin with very high resolution, but if it is flat, slow,
yeah,
then it should have large density of state. It should even be easier to see in ARPAS, right?
So, what lead doping do you get out of the topological crystalline insulator phase?
I don't remember on top of my head. I think we had a phase diagram. It's in the paper. I think it's around 0.3, more than 0.3 dm. So it's actually interesting, the topological phase, unlike the prediction. Prediction is in the pure tin telluride. In pure tin telluride, I don't believe any case of it being there. For a different material reason, I can blame the materials for that. But it extends all the way, very close to the lead side, which is supposed to be trivial. And I don't know, but experimentally, that's what we see.
Would it be possible for you to explore this proximity-induced superconducting surface with
including the nanowire and nanostructure, if we can, once we build this system, because it has this atomic level resolution and all that. So we, in principle, might be able to look at the spectroscopic version of Delft experiment, for example, or other nanowire proposals.
Okay, can you also do the experiments with, say, a supercurrent or with a magnetic field present?
Those are, again, we'll have to see how much we can play with this combination of setup. And I don't want to promise too much at this point.
Yeah,
but
can see a magnetic field would be a pain, but maybe
right.
A supercurrent could be...
Right, it might work. We will have to see the magnitude, and we have to figure out the parameter space once we build the system.
But it's not in a dilution phase, right?
We can add that in the first phase. We're not doing that, but we can add that. With the first phase, we go down to like 50, not 50, like say 100 millikelvin. But in the next phase, we can go there. But first, look at things that are easier to do, like 7 Kelvin interface superconductor, right? So you don't have to do that. And there, the advantage is gap is large, so there's a lot of interesting play there.
This is the helium-3 fridge.
Yeah.